Category F3, Full Service Station of the Year. Part 2, News Talk 106 to 108, February 10th, 2015.
And for ice in some patches this morning across the country. How are you, Mr. Yates?
I'm in good form. Interesting day today in the Dáil.
Yep.
First of all, we have quite a lot of news overnight. First of all, the signs that there might be a Labour TD, Anne Ferris, defecting, but that is only the tip of the iceberg because we know that 20 Labour TDs back in 2012 wrote to James Reilly, who was then bringing the passage of the legislation, the Pregnancy Protection of Life and Pregnancy Bill through the Dáil, saying that fetal abnormalities should be included. And therefore, they took the view, sorry, it didn't require a constitutional amendment to the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, didn't require a referendum. So what is the legal position? The Attorney General is saying, no. Clare Daly's bill, which is what the vote is all about today, is defective. Now, a couple of things there. First of all, it's only second stage. So why not government let it through on the basis that let a committee see, you know, get legal advice and tease it out and, you know, extrapolate more on the issue. But sure, the real politique of this is, Enda Kenny puts down the shutters, don't want to hear the word abortion this side of an election, a state of paralysis, even though his own health minister and the Taoiseach both at different times over recent weeks have said that they don't believe in the Eighth Amendment, they believe the current law is inoperable for clinicians. So if it is simply to do with Kenny's outdated caution, and obviously then there is the substantive question of whether the Eighth Amendment needs to be repealed or not.
Yeah, and I was watching a lot of the debate on this bill last week, at the end of last week, and one of the contributions, including the Minister for Health, he maintained that the bill as put in front of the Dáil was unconstitutional and this could not be legislated for what was envisaged. Anne Ferris nonetheless telling RT last night that she believes this is an issue above politics and she will vote with the opposition, namely with Clare Daly. We'll see if she follows through on that today. She would lose the Labour whip, and we'll see if others would be willing to do the same thing. There's a briefing from the Attorney General to affected, if you like, Labour deputies, telling them why the bill is unconstitutional. So we shall see what
happens. It seems to me the Labour Party want to support this bill, and but for maybe their loyalty to a Labour AG, you could say, a Labour appointed AG.
The Daily Telegraph, page 5.
This is a story now that I want to talk to you about.
Go on, hit me.
Well, no, I try at 55 to mentor a 30-year-old to get him through the hazards of life.
Corrupt, people would say.
Please,
not mentor.
Please. No, this is important. Young people and parents of teenagers, listen up. Page 5 of the Telegraph. Working hard in your 20s brings the highest reward, new research reveals. The teams of economists in the Federal Reserve Bank in New York claimed earnings in the first few years in the world of work have far more influence on your lifetime wealth. The research showed that work you do to climb up the ladder, to really make an impression between 21 and 29, means that you will have the most significant earnings growth later in life. It showed that while average earnings increased by 38% over a worker's lifetime, the earnings of the richest increased by 1,500%. But the point I'm trying to make is, how many people in their 20s, I'll go on a gap year, I'll go discover the world, and or I'll be a perpetual student. I mean, like, you've only started to work seriously since you're 30, you're now working night and day, but it's too late. You needed to have copped on a few years ago and put the hard yards in. I left school at 16, but the fact of the matter is,
there's nothing worse than having 30-year-olds who have worked, ploughed on through their 20s and then go, I'm too old and crusty now to do that year around Australia. I wish I'd done that at 22, 21, I didn't care where I sat.
It's about earnings, mate. No, the point about it is this, that, you know, it's the point at which you get a platform to leverage yourself for incremental increases thereafter. It's absolutely pivotal that you get a head start in your 20s.
Life is more than earnings, though, Ivan.
Since when?
what about experiences?
What would you know? You're only 30.
What about seeing the Aurora Borealis?
Do that when you retire. Do that when you're George Hook's age, do all that.
But
that
you'd have to push me up the volcano in a chair then.
But sure, you'd have no one to push you. But anyway, page 8 of the Daily Mail, another interesting story. We've all heard of student exchange programmes, but one teacher is looking for a swap. It was on Dundeel.ie. The primary school teacher in question is called Niamh, and she wants a taste of country life in the West, away from her current school in Swords. Page 8 of the Daily Mail tells us that amongst ads for bikes and cars, you can find Niamh's ad. It reads, primary school teacher with over 15 years' experience based in Swords, looking for Mayo Galway-based teacher to swap jobs for 2015. 2016 school year. So if you'd like to work in a large senior school in Dublin, give me a shout. So it's not just students.
I love this story on page 9 of the Herald. A quarter of Irish people want Valentine's Day to be banned. It's muck, it's rubbish. Page 9 tells us that 85% of singletons were amongst those who said that not having a date on Valentine's Day wouldn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter one bit. Most of them said overpriced flowers, overpriced restaurants, all led to the annoyance of the day. I'm having an anti-Valentine's Day dinner this Friday with single friends. Can't wait.
Okay, and just what happens. You know, the other thing that's happening on Saturday is 50 Shades of Grey.
Do you hear Gay Byrne's going to see it?
Is he? Well, good man, Gay.
He's on page 15 of the Star saying he's going to go to the film to see what all the fuss is about.
As you know, there'll be lots of commercial trivia around it, but B&Q staff are preparing for a sales frenzy as 50 Shades of Grey hits the big screen. Page 15 of the Daily Star tells us that the major hardware chain has urged staff to watch the movie ahead of what they believe will be a swift rise in demand for bondage gear. Tell me this. A surge in ropes, cable ties and tapes. Ducting tapes.
Sounds to me, ducting tapes. Ducting tapes.
That's what you put around pipes.
Do you ever do DIY?
No.
No, you don't, do you?
No. I've never done DIY.
You're too busy earning in your 20s.
Basically, we'll take a situation where a young woman has been on the pill for a long time. Mm. She's just a bit concerned about side effects or whatever. Or she's had some pregnancies and had some babies and she just doesn't want to go back on the pill. Yeah. What are the non-pill options that are 100% safe?
Okay, well, I mean, there's the long-acting reversible contraceptions. Chris has had a go at inserting one of them. Basically, you can get an intrauterine device that's either hormonal or non-hormonal. So it's a little winged device. I sent a little picture of it on Twitter if you want to have a look and see what it's like. But it's a little T-shaped plastic device. And Chris is currently practicing. I think I'll certify him from now on.
Just to be clear, you've brought a fake womb in. I'm not practicing on myself.
Yeah, I've brought a fake little womb in.
So what's left behind?
So basically, you have some threads. So the device comes in a big box. And usually women are completely freaked out when they see this big box. And they're like, you're going to put this into me?
Well, it looks about 9 inches.
Yeah. No, it's the size of a matchstick. Look,
it's actually the applicator.
No, but the applicator is 9 inches. Or
yeah,
6 inches.
But forget about the applicator. That's just for the doctor. But it does come in a massive box, and people kind of get completely freaked out when they see that. But it's actually a tiny little thing, tiny little plastic winged device. And that big, the applicator is just for the doctor to put it in, and you're left with this little winged device inside your womb, and threads coming out, which we cut, and the threads are there just to be able to take it out again whenever you want. So you can take it out if
is
you
there
want
any
it
discomfort?
In 6 months. There's a little bit of discomfort getting it in. Now, it really varies on the person. If someone has had kids, and especially recently, they wouldn't even know you've put it in. A lot of times they'll be like, is that done yet? Somebody else might get a bit of cramping or that, but it's usually very straightforward.
So what do you call that device? The cap and the coil, no?
So that's the intrauterine device. They're known by different kinds of
trainers. So what's the cap and the coil?
The cap... The coil is very like what Chris has just showed there, but it has no hormone in it. So the one that you've just picked up, Chris, is the one with hormone, and the other one is copper. Now, that's been around for absolutely for years, possibly like, you know, we're talking.
Do you have one of those?
Yes, I do. And you'll see the copper.
What's left inside the poor woman?
So this is it here, and we'll show you that, Chris. It's basically...
It's getting quite small.
It's very similar in size to the one that Chris took out.
Yeah, it's quite similar,
and
yeah.
The copper is basically, it kills some sperm and it prevents fertilisation, whereas the hormone kind of prevents the lining of the womb. Don't worry about that, Chris.
How long would you keep...
Chris is after taking this apart.
How long would you keep it in for?
You can put that copper one, that can stay in for 10 years, which is incredible, and it's a very cheap form of contraception. The other thing with the hormonal ones, they're much cheaper than the pill. That's the other thing. You pay up front, so you might pay to get it inserted, and it could be 140
euro. Is there any advice for women of a particular age that you're preferring one over another?
It's totally to do with your lifestyle. If someone is absolutely meticulous at taking something and is incredibly organised and is very confident that they'll take the pill properly, I don't know if anybody can really put their hands up and say, yes, that's me, then they're fine for the pill. But if somebody else is a little bit more... chaotic their lives that they lead. If they do a lot of travel, really, I think the long-acting ones are brilliant.
Okay, we've done those. We're short on time, but I'm looking at the injection, the patch, the implant, the vaginal ring. What are the options?
Yeah, an awful lot of parents come in with their young teenagers and bring them in to me and basically say, can you please make sure my child won't get pregnant? A lot of the time, if a teenager, another thing to do is an implant in the arm. Often someone might be age 15 or 16 and they'll come in with their mum who just wants to ensure 100% this child won't get pregnant. And we end up putting in implants, obviously with the consent of the child, but that means 3 years and you can feel just under the arm.
With the kit today, Sinead brought in like a fake piece of arm. So it's like a bicep muscle.
Yeah.
And it feels like skin. And under it, there's just the tiniest little rod, I suppose.
Yeah, a matchstick.
Again, about the size of a matchstick. So is that put in? Would that be put in a GP surgery?
Local anaesthetic, in a GP surgery or in a family planning clinic. And we just literally, there's a needle that goes in with it and it goes in very slickly under the skin.
What is NuvaRing?
NuvaRing. Now, I have brought one of these in for you. Someone handed it to you and you didn't know it was NuvaRing, it looks like an elastic band, but it basically is like the pill. It has estrogen and progesterone in it. And basically you put it up into the vagina once a month. It stays there for 3 weeks and then you take it out for the fourth week. I'm going to show that to you, Chris.
So that's short term enough. Implant, how long would that last?
3 years.
3 years, okay. So the different timing.
Now, the one thing about the implant under the skin is that a third of people get bleeding nonstop.
You need a doctor to fit that. This is like a... Just
which
a,
that? Yeah, that's fine. You
that's
can see how people
ring.
Can push that up into the vagina. They can do that themselves. But the implant, needs to be fitted by a doctor. But it lasts...
But even that...
No, that's totally doable, Ivan.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a little plastic ring about an inch in diameter.
Yeah, and it stays in the vagina for 3 weeks and it stays in during sex or it can come out for 3 hours max. And then the person takes it out for the fourth week and then they just remember to put it in again. So again, you just have to be a little bit tuned in to remember to put that one in. That's why these long-acting ones are brilliant if you want to be sure.
Where can people access information? Is there a website?
Yeah, there's a brilliant website, mycontraception.ie. I'd highly recommend because it goes through all age groups and all the different options. But that would be one message I would get out. Think about things other than the pill because there are much more reliable options out there.
All right, interesting stuff, Sinead. Absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much. You can follow Sinead as well on Twitter because she's been informing us for the last 24 hours about all of the things she was going to be showing us. And you can see some pictures of the different things we were talking about.
Sharon, what are the biggest challenges that you face at the moment?
Getting out of bed in the morning, and everything else that follows through the course of a normal day. I need assistance to do everything. I am fully dependent on others and have lost all independence. Luckily, I have a fantastic team of carers, who enable me to lead an independent life. They are my team. My morning time carers Jackie and Patricia come in all happy and get me up, showered, dressed and ready for the world. Then at night June and Caroline come in for a song and maybe a dance before they whisk me off in the hoist and put me to bed. I get on great with my carers. I'm blessed to have such lovely people around me, who truly do care. Senan loves all the carers. He gives them all a kiss and hug good night.
Now, the machine that you're using, the app on the iPad that enables you to communicate so well with us, you've got to use that because you've lost your ability to speak. You can make, obviously, as we can hear, some sounds. How quickly did you lose that ability to speak?
The first sign of any changes in my speech began in the autumn of 2013. Since then it has continued to deteriorate to where I am today, almost completely inaudible. My MND has a definite pace. I feel every 2 weeks a change happens. Another thing goes, another loss. MND teaches you to live with the constant stream of losses. You are constantly grieving your old self. your old abilities, your independence.
Now, Conal and Margaret, did you know anything much about motor neuron disease before Sharon's diagnosis?
No, I would have known a few different people that would have, famous, well-known people, I suppose, that would have died over the years. But quite honestly, no, I didn't know anything. I knew it was awfully serious. I knew it wasn't a nice thing.
Conal?
I knew of it, yes. I had, as Margaret said, I knew a couple of famous actors, but I also had a client a number of years ago who, a very nice man like that, he had it himself and died pretty soon after. So I always attributed it to being kind of an older man disease. Mm-hmm. I never, ever, ever in a million years considered that
it should be a young woman's disease, yeah.
Ever.
I mean, I can only guess at this, but the impact on the family must have been pretty difficult.
Very, very difficult to say the least, Pat. Yeah, it's absolutely devastating in one way. Obviously, Sharon can't do an awful lot for herself anymore, so obviously we all have to pitch in. And as she had said, she has a great team of carers, and obviously Margaret and Tom, her dad as well, do an awful lot, including with myself. So there's an awful lot to do. It is devastating in one way. In another way, we just try and get on with life, make it as normal as we can, have a normal dinner, have a normal home. Senan goes to school on a normal day, so that's as much as we can do for the moment.
Now, Sharon, Senan is six now. How is he with your diagnosis? I mean, he's only six, so therefore much of what he remembers vividly has been you already with motor neuron disease.
Senan has been incredible. He is a typical, rambunctious, happy-go-lucky, six-year-old, but children are incredibly resilient. He accepts me for what I am. He still wants me to play hide and go seek. He still wants me to bring him to the playground. And he still begs me to go to Smith's Toys. My biggest fear was the affect MND would have on his life. But as long as we provide him with a loving and happy home, we are doing a good job. Senan has embraced every piece of equipment that has come into our house. He loves wheelchair surfing. He grabs onto my chair and gets me to pull him along. He's a dab hand at driving the chair too. He has been known to bring my hoist into the living room, put on the full body sling, climb in with his cats and watch television. He memories of me are unfortunately scarred by MND.
It's funny, he's outside in the control room, and when you were talking there about Smith's Toys, he was cackling and chortling outside. But does he ask specific questions about motor neuron disease, Sharon?
Yes, he asks me occasionally, why does my voice sound funny? Why are my hands curled in? Or why don't my legs and arms work anymore? Dolos Campion, the owner of the creche Senan attends, gave me the best advice on how to explain to him about my condition. She advised me to tell him informally, in very simple language, no big words or names. If he wants to know more, he will ask. Leave it at that. Allow him time to process the information. And when he wants more information, he will come back and ask. So far it's working. I find every 2 months, he has a new set of questions for me. He's too young to understand or attach emotions to any of it. Thankfully, he's at an age where it's all about him.
Now, you, Sharon, are encouraging people to stay silent for 30 minutes to raise awareness about what it would be like to lose the ability to speak and to think, if today were the last day that you could use your voice, what would you say? Now, have you thought about what you would say if you could just have a couple more sentences?
I would tell my nearest and dearest how much I love them and treasure them. Then I would probably go a step further than the 30-minute silence and ask people to lie in bed at night for a few minutes. Don't move a muscle. Don't succumb to that itch. Ignore those aches in your joints and reflect. If this is all you could do independently, lie still, then what will you do tomorrow? with your full health and mobility, and how will you feel? Believe me, you will jump out of bed tomorrow and enjoy your life even more.
Tara, thank you. 53106 for your text messages. First, that Clare Daly amendment on fatal fetal abnormalities within the last few minutes. I asked the Labour TD for Clare, Michael McNamara, whether he'd support that amendment.
I haven't made a decision yet, and that will be based on the legal advice which we will be discussing in the Labour Parliamentary Party at 2:30 this afternoon. I understand the Attorney General has provided advice to the government. I would hope to see that, but I realise because of the arcane system that we have in Ireland, that might not be provided and we might be just accepted to take it in good faith. But I also understand that the party has commissioned legal advice from an eminent senior counsel, and I would like to see that. Obviously, I don't think that you can have constitutional certainty in this issue, but I think that doesn't absolve the Oireachtas of the duty to legislate. On the other hand, if there is, if the advices are that it's absolutely certain that this particular bill, as is currently drafted, is unconstitutional, well, then I'd have to consider that. But I mean, I don't think that we can rule out legislating for the issue. I would tend to agree with my colleague Ivana Bacic on that issue.
You sound like you are inclined to accept this amendment, except that there is a question over constitutionality, and if that can be proven,
there's always going to be a question over constitutionality of a bill like this, because of the Eighth Amendment and the way it's drafted. I mean, there are always going to be questions, and I don't think that that is a sort of a get out of jail card for the Oireachtas. I think we still have to legislate, but I mean, you know, there's a legislation which might be unconstitutional, and it would be very, very unusual for the Oireachtas to pass legislation which might be knowingly pass legislation which might be unconstitutional. But I mean, it's one thing to pass something that you think might be unconstitutional. It's another thing to vote for something which you're certain is unconstitutional. And I think that would be a waste of everyone's time and wouldn't really help.
But in the concept of what Clare Daly is trying to do, to legislate for the specific case of fetal abnormality, that on its own, that's something that you are in favour of, I'm taking it.
It is. It is.
And the question that's outstanding is whether it's constitutional or not. But the thing is, we won't know.
It's been reported today that an 82-year-old woman in Georgia has been arrested for shoplifting a body spray. The woman was spotted by staff making off with a bottle of Sexiest Fantasies body spray, which claims to drive any man wild. Afternoon, you're welcome to the Moncrief Show. On the show today, 1,000 foods to eat, 100 years of Coke, and the man who touched his own heart. Very good afternoon to you. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the show. Hope you're well. If you'd like to give us a call, 1890-453-106 is our low-call number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Later on, I'm not exactly sure when, but later on we will be bringing you the result of the top five videos in our Open to All competition. I'm telling you, there's been heated debate up and down the office. The three of us have been selecting our top fives, and then other people have been getting involved, and then there's been so it's very, very difficult to figure out who the top five are. But myself, Maria Walsh, and Peter Kelly are working at it, and ably assisted by lots of other people who don't have a vote yet have lots of opinions. There seems to be numerous people in here who do. Anyway, in the meantime, I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio the French ambassador to Ireland, His Excellency Jean-Pierre Thibault. Good afternoon, Jean-Pierre. Do you mind if I call you Jean-Pierre?
Oh, I don't mind. That's at all. On the contrary, let's make it the Irish way. So, good afternoon, Sean. It's a great pleasure.
I know this sounds like a stupid question, but in the era of the European Union, when all the members of the European Union talk to each other all the time on all sorts of levels, what does an ambassador do that they don't do?
They still do an important mission, which is, to connect and to help, first to help keep the connection between the two countries, to help solve the and misunderstanding that sometimes might occur, and also on the positive side, to try to bring, to build new bridges, new cooperation between the two countries.
Now, the Dáil has voted, and it has voted against Clare Daly's bill to allow abortion in cases of fatal fetal abnormality by 104 votes to 20. Anne Ferris of Labour voted against the bill and will be expelled from the Labour Parliamentary Party. However, she was the only Labour TD to vote against the government on this particular bill. Joined, of course, now by Shane Coleman, Newstalk's political editor, who is in Dáil Éireann. And Shane, welcome to the programme.
Thank you, George. Good to be with you.
In terms of fatal wounds to Labour, they'd be pretty happy about just losing one TD, I would have thought, given that Ciara Conway all week has been marked down as somebody who was going to vote against it.
Yeah, I think they'll be reasonably happy. Now, bear in mind that this time yesterday, they were pretty optimistic they'd lose nobody on this. Now, they have obviously lost one in Anne Ferris, but I think to lose one is bearable and is acceptable. It's a bit of a blow, but it's no more than that. If there had been more today, if Ciara Conway had voted against, or Michael McNamara had voted against, or Sean Kenny had voted against, and there had been more than one, it would have been a significant blow. Interestingly, I'm pretty sure in saying Dominic Hannigan, who was one of those who did have reservations about voting against this legislation, was not in the House and did not cast his vote. So we may hear a little bit more about that.
I was really struck. I think a lot of people were in October, 10 games in, no wins. I'd written you off. I think everybody had written you guys off. It just looked like this was, you know, you were heading. Was this going to be worse than the Sunderland season a couple of years ago under Mick McCarthy? That was the discussion going on. Did you panic? Did you? You didn't seem to. You seemed remarkably calm.
No, well, I the hardest job as a manager, I think, or one of the hardest. There's many different things, many different, you know, facets to the job, but one of the hardest things is to remind yourself of what you're doing, what the staff are doing, and what the players are doing. Know how it's operating, almost beyond results. Now, of course, I'm not naive. We know we're in a results business. But what I mean by that is what's the performance looking like? How are the players adapting? How are they learning? Are they understanding the challenges? Do they know a way of dealing with the challenges? And I thought we did. I genuinely thought this group are actually playing better than the results we're getting. And I had genuine belief in that. I had belief in the people, the way they were delivering performances, the way they were operating. And I just felt that, you know, my strength was that that's right. That's how to operate. And it will work for us. Now, over time, it's fair to say that after being written off so heavily, we got a win, we got another one on the back of that, and then we levelled things out. We had a couple of knocks, and then we got a point, then another win, then a few points, then a win. And you know the journey becomes different. And, you know, at the end of the day, even recently, we've had a couple of knocks, and yet we're 17th in the Premier League. Now, if you'd have asked a Burnley fan to be at this stage and be 17th in the Premier League after 10 games, I'm pretty sure most would have been surprised, not necessarily the Burnley fans, most people would have been surprised by that, and the Burnley fans would have been delighted by that. So we can't forget our journey. We knew the challenge when we started it. We still know the challenge now, but there is clear signs of progress, I feel.
The next 8 games, you have the top 7 teams in the league and Swansea. So that's a real challenge. It sounds like you relish that challenge. How all-encompassing is this for you? How much of your daily thought is about this as opposed to family and everything else going on?
Oh no, it's never far away from you, but to be honest, if you're a conscientious player, as I felt that I was, you know, the game, whether you're an individual player, whether you're a coach, whether you're a manager, it's never far away from you. You're always thinking about it. You know, there's no real complete switch off time. I'm pretty reasonable at it, I think. I do get time away where I do relax and I enjoy my kids and spending time with my wife and family and, you know, the odd game of golf and things like that. And I think I'm pretty reasonable at it. I think I do find a way of relaxing, but you never truly switch off from what it is, the demands. And I must say that's any level of football. That's not just because we're in the Premier League. I think every manager, coach and player is never far from their thoughts. The fact is, you know, you've got to perform, and in my case, you've got to organise a group to perform. Not only that, the staff, you've got to look at the media, you've got to make sure that you've got a handle on how the club's working, you know, the board element, the fan element, excuse me, and then still, through all that, make the team win. So there is a high demand mentally and the way that you're constantly thinking about the work that's done. But I think I manage it reasonably well. I'm not obsessed by what I do. I don't go home and watch non-stop football when my family are there, etc., etc. I do try and switch off.
Nice.
And so far, I manage it quite reasonably, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe ask my kids and my missus. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, right.
News Talk 106 to 108.